Ralph Schoenemann.
And Maya Schoen. Join you again for our WBAI Premium, playing excerpts, having discussion, the ongoing war against the Haitian people. And today I have two marvelous excerpts from An Unnatural Catastrophe, The U.S. Crucifixion of Haiti. This is a two-CD set. The first, The Ongoing War Against the Haitian People, and the second, An Unnatural Catastrophe, The U.S. Crucifixion of Haiti. It incorporates four dynamic, intense, meticulously documented programs. That's two 80-minute CDs for your contribution to WBAI for $75. The number to call, and please start the phones now, because in the last half hour, the phones in the prior show were ringing off the hook, and it's very difficult for people to get to all your calls. So come on board now, 209, that's 212-209-2950. Once again, 212-209-2950. We're going to start the show once again with an update of the case of Lynn Stewart. We have Ralph Pointer on the line. Today, February 3rd, breaking news.
23rd, Maya.
What did I say?
February 23rd.
How time passes. February 23rd, the Second Circuit has denied an en banc review. That means a full review of the entire court. When the Second Circuit, the appellate court, had reviewed the sentencing and the trial of Lynn Stewart, it had been a three-judge panel. And we've discussed the panel and who they are, the composition, and how they came about their decision extensively on Taking Aim. Now the entire panel has voted. They could not get a majority to review this appellate decision. This is very important. Today we have Ralph with us to discuss it. Ralph and I here were unable to download the opinion, and Ralph is going to go into great detail about what are the implications of this new decision from the appellate court. Ralph.
Yes. Well, one of the things that I've always been critical of people trying to be lawyers when they weren't, and I found myself trying to get involved, trying to read what the Second Circuit had said, and I found that they denied the in-bank court. They're not going to have all of the judges review this again. This is my reading of the opinion, and I looked at it again, but it sums up the one thing. It doesn't mean much because it is just an addition to what's happening in this government. The free speech is gone. The dollars have gone. The government is gone in a way that the people voted against, and they are continuing Bush 3 under Obama. This is the real issue. Lynn Stewart is a focal point. Lynn Stewart has rejected this view that people should be silent and not speak out against injustices. Lynn Stewart has rejected the view that the law tops morality, and she sits in the prisons as we speak. And it becomes our job on the outside to, as you have said often, Ralph, mobilize the people and make them understand what is happening with their government. Lynn Stewart is a case in point. What is happening with your government? And what this decision has meant to me. And I just spoke with Lynn yesterday, and she was her fiery, pleasant, going-forward self, and she criticized me in terms of my not learning the computer well enough and fast enough to keep up, to keep this and many other cases going, to stay informed with that. And she talked about the work to be done, because as an example, she did the work. And we must all try to live up to her example of doing the work of liberation, freedom, understanding, inclusiveness. And I know what side she would be on in many of the issues of the day, because this is the side she has been on all her adult life. When she became politically aware, and as Howard Zinn had said many times, most Americans are not politically aware of what America is. And as a young woman, when she realized that, she took the correct position to make America what it was supposed to be and what it claimed to be. So,
Ralph, the decision today, the further opinion of the Second Circuit, does this mean that they will now forego the hold on the case and issue what is called a mandate so that the case goes back into Judge Codal's court?
This is how I read it. They have issued the mandate to Judge Codal and with recommendations. And the recommendations, as I read them, and I'm not a lawyer and I never pretended to be or wanted to be, as I read them, it says they're recommending more stringent terms. I saw numbers there that, as I divided, my math is quite good, that suggested up to 30 years, as they suggest. And they suggest, and they make terrible statements in here, that say because Lynn Stewart has continued speaking after her arrest, continued her First Amendment right, even when people said the First Amendment was gone. This is how I read it. And making statements, she would have done it better, more judiciously, but she would have stood for self-determination, self-defense, and all of the things that we all claim we stand for with our religions and our so-called Bill of Rights. But people seem to have given them up, and Lynn said she would not. And I hear my reading of it says they want to punish her more for doing these things, saying these things, even after she's arrested. And to me, that shows the courage she has, the courage that we must have as a people, the courage that we must have as so-called leftists and organizers to get out and do the job or fold, because this is what they're saying. You know, those people who speak out on their rights, those people who act on the beliefs that we claim we have must be punished. And this is what I read. And
it's not just punished, Ralph. What the court is saying is that they must be silenced.
Silenced.
Incommunicado.
Exactly. Silenced.
Because,
incommunicado. And
that's
I guess
the heart of this matter. When they talk about an enhanced terrorist act on the part of Lynn Stewart, what they're talking about is the fact that Lynn Stewart was defending Sheikh Omar Abdul Rahman, accused of charged with something he did not commit. But not merely that. Lynn as his lawyer, Ramsey Clark as his attorney, Abdul-Jabbar as his attorney, were using, as they had every right to do, the public arena to articulate what the issues are. And I want to, Ralph, call attention to an editorial in today's New York Times called Terrorism and Free Speech. It's interesting because the New York Times has been beating the drum for most of the repressive measures that constitute the all-out assault on rights and absolutely the framing of Lynn Stewart as the lawyer for Sheikh Abdul Rahman. But Ralph, there is an attorney named Ralph Hurtig who's a retired administrative law judge who had been providing training in peaceful dispute resolution to the Kurdish Workers' Party. And consequently, he is being charged with material support for terrorism. Now, Ralph Hurtig is the subject of the editorial Terrorism and Free Speech by the New York Times, and they write the following. There needs to be a strong protection for a core area of protected speech and advocacy. Americans should be able to make arguments to a court on behalf of terrorist groups. This is crucial for the legal system to work and for the constitutionality of laws to be tested. People should be able to print the views of groups for journalistic purposes, either to report the news or to convey a range of opinions. People need to be free to speak independently about these groups. These rights must be made clear in advance. It isn't enough for a government simply to say it will not prosecute in these cases. As long as people fear being sentenced to 15 years in prison, they will not engage even in protected speech. Now, this is the liberal New York Times taking the measure of the full significance of what's being done to Lynn Stewart. This is a shutdown of the right to free speech, a right to political advocacy, and the right for lawyers to defend those accused of crimes by the state. The attempt to escalate the sentencing of Lynn is exactly an attempt to bury her alive, for articulating the evidence about the sheikh and for defending his right to speak
I would like to interfere
in Egypt.
I would like to interfere there, Ralph, to make clear once again, Lynn Stewart did not pass messages to the sheikh's followers. Lynn Stewart made a press release through Reuters to his Egyptian attorney, and a clarification of that press release to Reuters, through Reuters, to the Egyptian lawyer in Egypt, and that is not passing secrets unless Reuters is a secret organization. So I hear it repeated over and over again about those, from those so-called leftists who are anti-Muslim, repeat the same mantra. Lynn Stewart passed messages. And I get so sick and tired of hearing that lie repeated, but I guess it's in Germany, they proved that if you say it over and over again, people will believe it. Now they're bringing it to America. If they say it over and over again, people will believe it. And I would like for people to identify those phony leftists who say Lynn Stewart passed messages. She did not. Clarify that.
Ralph, the issue of passing messages in a certain sense begs the question. A lawyer has the absolute obligation to utilize every opportunity to articulate the cause of their client. And the client has not been sentenced to have their lips sewn together with stitches. The client has the right to speak about their ideas and their views like anybody else. He wasn't sentenced to silence.
No, I agree with that, but we can't say that Lynn Stewart did something she didn't do.
Of course.
She did not pass messages. She should have had the right, but she did not. She made a press release through Reuters, and people lie about it over and over and over again. So I said that identifies people for me when they confuse, for their own purposes, a press release through a news agency for a message. And so I conclude with, we have our work cut out for us. This is where this government is going. They want to silence people. And as we speak, Lynn Stewart has a 90-day ban on her making a phone call, even to her lawyers, or using email for 90 days. So they are effectively silencing Lynn Stewart. And those who would go along with this, I consider them as the enemy. They are the enemy of justice. They are the enemy of any type of morality.
Ralph,
to silence or to gag people is one of the most... Go ahead.
Just to point out, Ralph, because we have to...
yes, I understand.
Here,
I get started
this.
On this, and I'm sorry.
The National Lawyers Guild has honored Lynn's life work. The National Lawyers Guild New York chapter is honored for her life's work and is celebrating her entire life as a defender of the oppressed, defending, of course, her rights in this frame-up trial. And I mentioned that because what the National Lawyers Guild has just done, and it was done yesterday, has to be something that we get every organization involved in struggle for rights to join in doing, to celebrate Lynn and to defend her. And the movement against for the truth about 9/11 in particular has a very big stake in what's involved here, because Lynn is defending a man falsely accused. And the whole mantra of terror, terror, terror. Every day there's a new frame-up, a new false flag operation. The purpose of this is to shut down free speech in the United States. That's what the case of Lynn is at the center of, the defense of our rights as a people. So we have to mobilize, as you say, quoting Arthur Kinoy, these battles will not be won in the courts, they'll be won in the streets.
Well, as Larry Pinkney said to me earlier on today, it is not about them, now it's about us. Who are we? And we have to put up or shut up. We must stand up and organize. We must stop the bickering as to whether we're going to have two separate movements for May Day. We must have one movement of all the workers of the world, even those most radically underpaid workers of the world. And I see here in New York they're laying off 1,000 transit workers because they have stolen the money and run. And we're all in the same in the same boat. And all of us oppressed people who do not understand that had better wise up and understand and do something. Organize, organize, organize. And here's a shout-out to Lynn Stewart sitting in that prison, and I hope she's able to listen in.
And you can find out more about the National Lawyers Guild New York Chapter Honor of Lynn April 16th, 6 to 10 p.m. at its Spring Fling. Check out the NLG website, which is www.nlgnyc.org. And please go to our website, www.takingaimradio.com, for information on how to contact Lynn, how to write support letters for her to the judge, and it is imperative that you start doing this right away.
I would order your premium, except that I ordered it last week. It is so fantastic.
Thanks, Ralph.
It is so perfect, and it's so far ahead of its time in discussing the unnatural disaster in Haiti.
And that gets us a great lead-in to the excerpt that we're going to play today. And we'll be with Ralph again next week, so we'll be hearing from you.
Now, hopefully we're going to have a special on WBAI and Pacifica at large about the cause of Lynn Stewart and what's at stake for all of us.
Okay, so the number to call is 212-209-2950. We're on only until just before 6 when the news goes on, so this is your only opportunity today. And now, Michael G., please take it away with the excerpts.
1 week ago, a 7-point earthquake laid waste to Haiti, particularly its capital, Port-au-Prince, killing at least 200,000 people and making homeless 3 million people, 1 million in the capital itself. Today on Taking Aim, we're going to discuss the military adventure now underway, spearheaded by the United States along with the United Nations, the occupation, the reoccupation of Haiti. We will also discuss the impoverishment of Haiti, the devastation, how Haiti has been laid waste by imperial powers, first colonial powers, then imperial powers throughout its history. When Secretary of State Hillary Clinton landed in Haiti to meet with Haitian President René Préval, she demanded the imposition of emergency decree, martial law. She said, the decree would give the government an enormous amount of authority, which in practice they would delegate to us, meaning the U.S. military. Monday, 6 days after the earthquake, the state of emergency was created, creating martial law conditions that will be enforced by the U.S. military. Landing the U.S. military in Haiti was the preoccupation of President Obama and the Department of Defense. Aid was not the first priority, bringing water, food, and medical attention to the people of Haiti. Ralph?
Hundreds of thousands of Haitians in peril for lack of water, food, and medical supplies. And the imposition of martial law makes clear, as the World Socialist website points out presciently, that the central preoccupation of the U.S. operation has nothing to do with saving lives, but to establish military control over the nation. In a preview of the widespread repression in active preparation and engagement, the United Nations troops have fired bullets on a crowd of desperate people because they had congregated, quote, too close, unquote, to the gate of the Port-au-Prince airport, an entry point for food, medicine, water, and supplies coming into the country. The airport is now militarized under U.S. control. It is the staging point for the vast influx of American military forces in Haiti, and Haitian riot police are firing to break up crowds in the city center. In fact, the size of the U.S. force in Haiti is now swelled to 7,500 soldiers officially. In fact, it's larger than that. Most of those stationed on warships off Haiti's coast. Two companies of the 82nd U.S. Airborne are scheduled to join 1,000 soldiers on the ground at the airport. And on Sunday, President Obama signed an executive order mobilizing the military reserves for service in Haiti, brothers and sisters. The U.S. is beefing up its military presence even as the death toll in Haiti escalates. More than 70,000 corpses were buried in mass graves. The Secretary of State for Literacy of Haiti, Carol Joseph, stated the government now estimates that the final death toll will surpass 200,000. They have no way of recording the actual number of dead because the bodies are being left buried under the rubble. This will make the earthquake the deadliest on record, a staggering toll for a country of 10 million people. Over 1.5 million Haitians are already homeless. That number will escalate as well. The media accounts on Monday acknowledged that aid is not reaching the capital. This is 1 week after the earthquake struck. 6 days after the quake, precious little aid is getting beyond airport perimeters, stated the British London Times. Emergency aid is barely reaching some parts of the earthquake-devastated capital, but not reaching the population.
Ralph, it has reached a point that the French Cooperation Minister, Alain Joyandet, on Monday issued a formal complaint to the Obama administration over the U.S. military's arbitrary control of the Port-au-Prince airport. Two French relief planes have been turned away over the weekend. These are for Doctors Without Borders. Doctors Without Borders has served throughout the world in emergency situations and has a permanent presence in Haiti. They were bringing in a field hospital and were forced to land in the Dominican Republic and arrange transportation, delaying the setup of this hospital with its operating tables for 48 hours. Then also the replenishment of their supply. There are no antibiotics in Haiti. There are no appropriate surgical instruments. This also was diverted. In the first hours after the earthquake struck, UNICEF brought a plane with supplies from Panama. And this too was turned back by the U.S. military, stating that the priority was to have the U.S. Marine Expeditionary Force landing.
The same has happened with the World Food Program. They have been obliged to go to the Dominican Republic and to go by truck to try to get into Haiti. They are being deliberately obstructed and stalled, exactly as was done at the time of Katrina, when aid was turned back, when even military helicopters carrying medicine and aid were refused entry, and when a helicopter pilot at the time of Katrina was subject to court-martial for flying in supplies. At a camp in Chal, residents stated that UN soldiers who had arrived tossing biscuit packages from the back of a truck without water. Quote, "We've been waiting since Tuesday. That's all there is," said Van Luis Paul, a father of three, showing an empty biscuit package to a reporter. "We don't need military aid. We need food and shelter," a man yelled at UN Secretary Ban Ki-moon as he visited Port-au-Prince for a fleeting moment. Even in the heart of the capital, enormous tent cities next to the flattened National Palace have had no aid, according to the Washington Post. Thomas Jefferson was aghast. In 1791, Haitian slaves revolted against France, establishing the Western Hemisphere Second Republic. The principal author of the U.S. Declaration of Independence feared that this successful Caribbean Revolution would foster, quote, "a great disposition to insurgency among American slaves," unquote. A war that would end up, Jefferson wrote, in the extermination of one or the other race. To forestall this dread possibility of a slave uprising in the United States, he cut off all trade to the new state, refused to extend a diplomatic recognition, and was preparing for bankruptcy of Haiti. The strategy worked. A century later, Woodrow Wilson sealed Haiti's fate. In 1915, he sent in the Marines, an occupation that lasted into the mid-30s. The occupiers wrote a constitution that granted them unilateral power, built an island-wide road system with forced labor. It's a process of constant and deliberate devastation of Haiti, isolation and blockading of Haiti, menacing and starving out of Haiti. The history that binds the U.S. and Haiti, a cynical and dishonest editorial in the New York Times. Once again, the world weeps with Haiti, a country which it describes as characterized by despair and dysfunction that would be a disaster anywhere else but in Haiti is the norm. Look at Haiti, the New York Times intones, and you will see what generations of misrule, poverty, and political strife will do to a country.
Ralph, only 50% of the population had clean water, had access. 50% of the population was living on less than a dollar a day. Yet, Haiti was devoting its gross national product to paying off tens of millions of dollars each year to the international banking institutions. More money than it spent in medical care, and certainly more money than was ever spent in education, which for the most part is private. This created a situation where, as a study funded by the USAID itself showed, more than 225,000 children are living as virtual slaves, as domestic laborers, because their parents cannot afford to feed and house and clothe them. It's very important to mention the indemnity debt. It began as early as the rebellion against the French and Haiti gaining its independence. A condition for the recognition of Haiti's independence by the French was paying off the plantation owners. 24 million francs was borrowed to pay off the plantation owners, and Haiti did pay back that debt. Then the U.S. seized the National Bank of Haiti in 1915, bringing in the Marines to control Haiti and impose foreign investment. The story goes on and on, such that 40% of the gross national product of Haiti is going to pay the debt each year. As I mentioned, $50 million a year, primarily to the United States, and having reduced that, it might be reduced to $20 million. Haiti had been the most productive of the Caribbean islands in the late 1700s, supplying half of the coffee and half of the sugar for Europe. It was a very productive country. It has been devastated, the forests destroyed, and then, last but not least, the U.S. coming in and destroying all the Haitian pigs. All the pigs at one time, the supposed swine fever, gathering up the cochons, the Haitian pigs who were immune to the swine fever, destroying every one of them, and these pigs mostly were in the hands of the peasantry. Then imposing purchase from the U.S., hogs that could not survive in the Haitian conditions, consequently destroying the agricultural base for the farmers. Again, the U.S. imposed the importation of rice. Haiti had been self-sufficient in growing rice, and instead the U.S. imposed a purchase of rice in exchange for aid. Ralph?
Disney, paying people 8 cents an hour. What's called Disney's Hell in Haiti and Haiti Progray. Over the past two decades, U.S. State Department officials have consistently prescribed development of the transformation industry as the antidote to Haitian poverty. 250 factories employed over 60,000 Haitian workers in Port-au-Prince. The wage was $2.64 a day. Those wages were drastically cut. Sweatshops were imposed throughout Haiti. This is, in fact, the constant. The children of Haiti, hundreds of Haitian street kids find haven in the capital's huge cemeteries. That's where they sleep. And indeed, as you mentioned, Maya, the constant accumulation of a debt that is paid off multiple times throughout the history of Haiti. In fact, it was the mobilization against the debt that gave rise to the general strike in Haiti. And indeed, when we had the International Tribunal Against the Debt in Lima, Peru, of which I was one of the six presidents, Jean-Bertrand Aristide endorsed the call for the immediate cancellation of the debt, and the masses seized upon this campaign and the campaign of Jean-Bertrand Aristide, and it was considered a popular insurrection. They saw the Aristide candidacy as a means to dismantle the Duvalier state. They expected Aristide would lead that struggle, and he was elected with 67% of the vote, but in fact, the realities are, and we have to state this, brothers and sisters, Jimmy Carter informed Aristide that he would keep the troops in the barracks on two conditions. One was that Aristide guaranteed that he would maintain Cedrus as the head of the army in Haiti. In other words, the Duvalierist figure who the United States had trained and prepared would be kept in control of the army. And the second is that Aristide would honor the IMF austerity program in Haiti. Ignoring widespread opposition, as Haiti Progray reported on September 5, 1995, The government of President Jean-Bertrand Aristide pushed ahead with a sweeping World Bank and International Monetary Fund structural adjustment program that devastated the already precarious social and economic situation of most Haitians. Quote, "We know in all countries the structural adjustment program causes damage," conceded Prime Minister Marc Michel in a press conference. "But we have something that makes us different from other countries because 3 years of the coup d'etat did 60% of the adjustment. Nevertheless, the Aristide Michel government intends to administer the remaining adjustments, starting with the privatization and complete abolition of public institutions in accordance with the Paris Accords of August 1994. That document, negotiated by the World Bank and the IMF with the Aristide government, called for the, quote, drastic reduction of tariffs and import controls on open foreign investments, aid to the export sector, massive retrenchment in the public sector, the elimination of price controls, wage restraints, and a full privatization. In its August 10th press conference, Prime Minister Marc Michel outlined some of the first state-run industries to be privatized. He stated that Haiti's state-owned flour mill and cement plant, the two key factories in Haiti, would be privatized through outright sale or through a management subcontract. That out of the 667 flour mills, 150 would remain. That Teleco, the telephone company, then the electrical authority, and the ports and airports would be privatized in accordance with the dictate of the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. The union, representing the workers at the National Airport Authority at the time, denounced this attitude of the Prime Minister. Quote, "We've inherited a bad administration," noted Henri Michel, head of the airport workers, adding, "the state should not be getting rid of important sources of national income." Prime Minister Michel warned that the Haitian government had been allowed no choice but to pursue aggressive privatization. And indeed, this process, this elimination of the public sector, was a predicate for the pauperization of the masses. Those are the circumstances that permitted the government of Jean-Bertrand Aristide to be targeted by the U.S. First, they imposed upon it a program to demobilize, demoralize the population, and then they went in for the kill. But the absolute predicate of all this was the destruction of the popular movement, the demobilization of the masses, and so far from the population being armed, so far from the people being given the arms with which to defend themselves, so far from the people being put in charge of the factories, so far from the public sector emulating the very beginnings of the Cuban Revolution, the IMF and the World Bank was put in control.
Ralph, it was important for the United States to destroy the popular organizations that developed in the community and were the original basis for the Lava Las movement, and the United States imposed the terminology that these were actually gangs instead of community organization. And Kevin Pina has on YouTube a documentary that shows explicitly the United Nations going house by house, seeking people, putting X's on the houses in green fluorescent paint, like a Nazi campaign throughout the bidonville.
Alan Nairn, who had been reporting consistently and perhaps the most insightful and honest reporting on the crisis in Haiti over the past three decades, ever honest about the collaboration of those who have been professing to be part of a mass mobilization with the IMF agenda. And here is Alan Nairn, Our Payroll, Haitian Hit, October 9, 1995. A notorious gunman charged in the 1993 murder of Haiti's justice minister has been sprung from jail with help from U.S. officials. At the time of the assassination, he was secretly on the payroll of the U.S. embassy. Much of his story has been confirmed by U.S. officials who worked in Haiti. The gunman, Marcel Morisson, worked with U.S. intelligence by serving as an attaché for National Police Chief in 1991 coup leader, Lieutenant Colonel Michel Francois. Morisson's release, which has stunned and angered President Jean-Bertrand Aristide, came days before he was due to give new evidence to a presidential investigation team probing the assassination of Justice Minister Guy Mélary, as well as the slayings of pro-Aristide businessman Antoine Ismary and the outspoken priest and peasant leader Father Jean-Marie Vincent in 1994. In other words, as the article details in great particularity, it was the Defense Intelligence Agency which was running the Makut and the death squads that were targeting officials, anybody who was opposing the austerity program and the IMF, officials within Lavalas, officials within the Aristide government, who are being eliminated physically and consistently as part of the process of death squad run by the United States, run by the Defense Intelligence Agency, the permanent crime against the people of Haiti.
Ralph, I'd like to close with the fact that the U.S. Coast Guard cutters that are surrounding Haiti have been there before, and that is to prevent an outflow of people to Miami. They have emptied a detention center in South Florida in order to be able to fill it with Haitian refugees.
The crisis of Haiti is not new, brothers and sisters. It is a permanent crisis of targeting Haiti for devastation, isolation, for pauperization, and for constant death squad attacks. It has been the consistent pattern of U.S. relationship to Haiti from its inception. But the issue before us is not the permanent targeting of a victim people. The issue is not merely the fact that the Haitian masses have never been forgiven for the slave revolt which destroyed the greatest army of the day of Napoleon, which gave rise to the prospect of a generalized uprising of the slaves of the United States. The issue is, how do the people fight back? How do the people defend themselves? How do the spokespersons for the masses fulfill their obligations to those they are supposed to represent? By arming them, brothers and sisters, by putting the people in control of the economy, by having workers control the factories, workers' ownership of the land, workers' committees to run the society, workers' militia to resist the foreign occupations, workers' struggle to destroy the crimes of imperialism, because nothing short of that, brothers and sisters, will end the crisis of the Haitian masses. This tragedy, this catastrophe, which is but the current opportunity for imperialism to impose yet again a wave of subjugation upon Haiti, flows from the absence of one fundamental thing: resistance. You cannot implement the program of the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank. You cannot put in charge of the Haitian army the criminals who served the Duvalier regime and who are at the service of U.S. imperialism. You cannot, as Jean-Bertrand Aristide did, have bodyguards provided by Blackwater and think that you're going to resist the predations of and crimes of the criminals in Washington. The masses will not be defended that way. The masses have never been defended that way. The struggle in Cuba was not resolved that way. The people of the world will not win their freedom that way, brothers and sisters. The crisis is real and immediate, not only for the people of Haiti, but for our own country, and the lessons are the same.
You've been listening to an excerpt from the ongoing war against the Haitian people. This is a two CD, over 2.5 hours of jam-packed, incredible programming. CD 1, The Ongoing War Against the Haitian People, has two programs on it, edited down to fit on the CD. And CD 2, An Unnatural Catastrophe, The U.S. Crucifixion of Haiti, of which you've heard only a small excerpt. $75 contribution showing your support for WBAI, your station, your listener-sponsored station. Please get on the phone now, 212-209-2950. I don't think I have to say to any of the Taking AIM listeners, and this is now our ninth year, Ralph, is that it? Ninth?
Right.
All right, we're in our ninth year. Whoa, ninth year, and most of you have been listening to us all those years, following us from the morning to the 5 o'clock hour, where we've been probably 8 years now, and listening week after week, year after year. And it's because of your support for WBAI that we've been with you. Ralph?
Well, Maya, let me say this. A crisis is a terrible thing to waste. That's what Georges Sassin, president of Haiti's Manufacturers Association, told the Washington Post on February 16th. Quote, "This is what the earthquake is today, an opportunity, a huge opportunity," added Reginald Bulos, described by the Washington Post on Monday as the owner of a small empire of supermarkets, hotels, and car dealerships. We need to give the message, we are open for business. We have a real opportunity. This is a land of opportunities. Labor will be very inexpensive. Meanwhile, the Washington Post reports, as does the Miami Herald, U.S. firms are jockeying for a bonanza of cleanup work. At least two politically connected U.S. firms have enlisted powerful allies in the Haitian military to compete for the high-stakes business. We could go on, brothers and sisters. This is the sweatshopization of Haiti in the wake of the earthquake. This is the exacerbated plunder that is at work at Haiti as we speak. The mobilization of our own people to resist this kind of predation at home and abroad depends on knowledge, depends on facts, depends on information. We ask you to support this effort, to equip yourselves with the data, with the analysis, by phoning in for these CDs and to support the fund drive of WBAI.
212-209-2950, the ongoing war against the Haitian people. It is so important to persist and to maintain accurate files and to keep this information flowing. You may have heard our dogs barking because we're now coming to you by phone from home. We record week by week in the studios of KPFA and then send the shows to WBAI. And what they were barking at was the postman who was bringing further boxes in Ralph's longstanding Freedom of Information Act lawsuit against the FBI and the CIA and the Defense Department, you name the departments, who withhold information, or if they provide information, it's always blanked out. And so this has been a very long-standing lawsuit, thanks to Jim Lazar in Washington, D.C. And I bring this up to make the point that what Ralph and I do with our extensive research is we make sure that the blanked-out moments, those blanked-out information that you would get from the bourgeois press, has become revealed to you, and most of all, is synthesized and analyzed so that you can take action. And now we have to ask you to take some action, and we provide a gift for you, which is get on the phone, get your family and your friends and your colleagues on the phone, and dial 212-209-2950 for our gift to you, the ongoing war against the Haitian people. 2-CD, jam-packed CD set. Ralph?
I'm looking at USA Today, Maya. Marines studied their own history in Haiti, describing Haiti as a major part of Marine Corps law. The Marines, the article stated, governed Haiti from 1915 to 1934 after an invasion force was sent to prevent an anti-American government from assuming power. Non-commissioned officers governed Haiti with little supervision. And the USA Today article, brothers and sisters, quotes Lieutenant Colonel Gary Kime, the commander of Marine Logistics Battalion, who said that he and other officers were ordered to study the history of the occupation before being deployed to Haiti. We were required to reread it. We've been here before, and we've been successful. We know what to do. Yes, they do, brothers and sisters. So must we. Call in, brothers and sisters. Support the effort to resist this predation. The murder and imprisonment of those who fight imperialism is a constant. Spying upon those who resist. The attempts to undermine and demobilize our population at every opportunity is part of the process, too, that the imperialists never relent in doing. The persecution of Lynn Stewart is linked inexorably to this. It's a resistance to a class rule that is brutal, unrelenting, and is in the process of the rapid construction the architecture of the fascist state. So resist, brothers and sisters, by supporting the knowledge and the effort to mobilize people in their own name.
Michael, I don't hear any phones ringing. I don't know if that's a technical issue or...
No, it's not a technical issue. Folks are just listening to you both and are not going to the phones because you are talking. And I remember saying that to you, that was what was going to happen. But right now, we're taking the final 15 minutes of this program, Taking Aim with Ralph Schoeman and Maya Schoen, to get you, those of you who have been listening for those 8 years to this program, to go to your phones and dial that number, 212-209-2950. The two CD set for a pledge of $75, The Ongoing War Against the Haitian People. That's Taking Aim's gift. That's Taking Aim's thank you gift to you for supporting this radio station. This radio station that provides information like we're hearing right now. We need you to go to the phones right now. In this final 15 minutes of the program, the final 13 minutes or so of the broadcast, dial 212-209-2950. Show your support.
This is a gift. This is extra work.
Indeed.
That I did.
Sure.
And we provide it to WBAI.
Absolutely.
WBAI is reaping 100% of your premium donation. That's 100%. There is no money going to buy this premium from some other producer. This is 100%. Your $75 remains with Pacifica. Please. Get on the phone now, 212-209-2950. The next fund drive, we're going to play music so that everybody gets on the phone instead of waiting to hear us speak.
212-209. Oh, boy, I bet you that'll get the phones to ringing. 212-209-2950. Yeah. Let's hear from you now, folks. There are a couple of calls coming in right now. We have volunteers standing by. They're waiting for those calls to come in. There's another call coming in for Taking Aim with Ralph Schoeman and Maya Schoen. Now we have four calls on the line. We need a full board. That's 15 calls coming in right now for this program that brings you this information. And you know, you absolutely know that you can hear this information nowhere else. You can't even hear this program on another Pacifica radio station. It's only on WBAI. So let's hear from you now. All right, now we have 10 calls on the line now. We're having our folks in the back. They're jumping around to answer those phones, take those pledges. Ralph Schoeman and Maya Schoen, Taking Aim, Tuesdays at 5 p.m. The two CD set for a pledge of $75. The Ongoing War Against the Haitian People. You're not responding to me in my voice. You're responding to Ralph and Maya and the work that they do each and every week without commercial interruption. That's what we're talking about. They can present this on this radio station because there are no commercials. There's nobody vetting what they say. Let me see the script before you go on the air. Do your program. Just go ahead and do the program. And that's what's going on. And we appreciate your help right now. You're supporting this radio station, WBAI, 212-209-2950. Use your Visa card, your MasterCard, American Express, electronically. It's all tax deductible. It's up to you to do it. This is your responsibility to support this program, to support this radio station. It's yours right now. Do it. Take it in your hand and let everyone see how important this station is and how important this program is by making that call right now to WBAI for Taking Aim with Ralph Schoeman and Maya Schoen. We have about 8 minutes to go before the end of the program. Can you keep these phones lit throughout the entire 8 minutes? Can you do that? I know you can. You're traveling throughout the state, the three states this signal broadcasts in: New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, even parts of Pennsylvania pick up this signal. Taking Aim with Ralph Schoeman and Maya Schoen. You hear this information, as I say, without commercial interruption. Ralph and Maya, the phones are ringing now. The folks are fully engaged.
Michael, you're a master. Thank you.
You're so incredible. You've got the drive. You've got the energy. And folks, please, brothers and sisters, we know that you're listening in Oregon and Washington and California and in the Midwest and in the South. please get on the phone now, 212-209-2950.
Every phone is filled right now. Every phone is filled. And Ralph and Maya, I know there are more than 15 people who are listening to us right now. There are more than 15 people who are motivated to go to their phones and support this program, to support this program on this commercial free radio station. So what I want you to do, if you get a busy signal right there, right now, I want you to be patient. I want you to hang up, count to 20, and then call right back. 212-209-2950. Ask the volunteers for the two CD set on Taking Aim. It's called The Ongoing War Against the Haitian People. It's a two CD set, just $75. It's tax deductible. Make your calls now. Volunteers are standing by. They're scrambling to take all of your calls and process the ones that are coming in right now as quickly as possible so they can pick up another phone and say, WBAI, may I take your pledge? And it takes about 2 minutes. You will have done you have taken care of your responsibility, because it is a responsibility right now to make sure that this station is here so that we can continue to bring you programs like Taking Aim. Let's hear from you now.
212-209-2950. The Ongoing War Against the Haitian People. Two CD set. You are not going to hear this anywhere. It's not available on the internet. It is only with your contribution. As you heard today, this is rapid moving with a lot of history and a lot of current analysis. We go into the detail why Haiti was destroyed. They talk about the devastation as if it's the responsibility of the Haitian people. It was not. This was a massive targeting of the Haitian people.
And we also document, brothers and sisters, the fact that there were massive, massive quantities of oil at the tectonic plates offshore Haiti that the United States has been mapping over a substantial period of time, monitoring, by the way, the status of those tectonic plates and the prospect of earthquake. As we will show and as we have documented, it is not mere chance that the head of the armed forces for the Southern Division in the United States was in Haiti on the day before the earthquake. It is not by chance that the Deputy Prime Minister of Haiti was summoned to the military base in Miami on the day before the earthquake. It is not by sheer circumstance that the determination to seize control of the area for the purpose of developing and exploiting these vast reserves of oil off of Haiti are linked to the monitoring of the physical conditions that surround that island and the region. No, brothers and sisters, this is a long-standing method of control and rule, and we seek to document the realities that are abundantly available to us if we look, if we understand, and if we have the courage to speak out about what is really taking place. Please call.
And also, Ralph, we also importantly address in these CDs which way forward for the Haitian people, and what was the result of Jean-Bertrand Aristide's cooperation with the International Monetary Fund and the presidency of Bill Clinton.
Well, it was a lesson that we had to learn with Allende in Chile that is learned over and over and over again. You have no opportunity to obtain concessions from an imperial rule that is relentless and ruthless and military and murderous in its design and its implementation. That has to be fought. It has to be fought seriously with the mass of the population at the front of that struggle. Absent that, victim Haiti, brothers and sisters.
That's right. And in Haiti, there was a widespread movement. That was the movement that brought about the successful election of Jean-Bertrand Aristide. It was a community-based movement, the Lavalas movement, and it has been targeted over and again. It's not just disillusionment. It is the direct targeting by the UN forces of this community-based movement so that there could not be mass participation. Please call 212-209-2950, because we are talking about participation. We are talking about what it means to build a community, to be part of a community. And communication is of utmost priority. We have no way of reaching you without this communication, and that means without WBAI, you would not be hearing our voice, our voices. I sometimes speak of Ralph and myself as if we're one. 212-209-2950. Get on the phone. If it's busy, as Michael said, wait a moment. Take a deep breath and then dial again. Michael?
Two hearts beating in unison, brothers and sisters.
Absolutely.
And we are approaching our 28 years together. That doesn't match the 50 years of WBAI. So please, let's keep the WBAI on the air for another 50.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you're calling and you're supporting the work that Ralph and Maya do, the ongoing work, the ongoing effort, and the updates that Ralph and Maya are doing, or Ralph Pointer on, talking about the saga of Lynn Stewart at the beginning of the program, at the beginning of the last several programs. 212-209-2950. You're calling up and saying yes to that. Yes, I want more information. Yes, I want to support this program and support the efforts of those producers. I want to support the efforts of this radio station that is here, that is bringing me information. I'm not getting this information anywhere else in the media landscape. I am getting it here in the middle of the FM dial, and I think that is pretty important. So yes, I want to make my contribution of $75, and I want them to send me the 2-CD set, The Ongoing War Against the Haitian People, presented and put together specifically for the WBAI audience. 212-209-2950. Again, you can use your plastic Visa card, MasterCard, or American Express. You're sending this money. It is tax deductible for basic operating expenses of this radio station. That's what we're talking about. So that all of the producers, when they come here, that the microphone's alive and that they can present their information. Ralph and Maya, we're going to give the last moments to you for your last words, and then
Thank you, ma'am.
Okay, again, I want to remind everybody, 100% of your donation is going to WBAI Pacifica. 212-209-2950. This is our donation to Pacifica, to WBAI. Our gratitude for broadcasting, taking in all these years, all the extra work, all the extra labor, and this is done. These premiums will go out to you as soon as the department gets it out in the air, gets it out across the country. 212-209-2950. Please don't delay.
Ralph, Pointer was eloquently setting forth a new crisis facing Lynn Stewart. Your support for our work is a support for Lynn as well, brothers and sisters. Let me say that the United States Agency for International Development set forth an agenda calling Making Haiti the Taiwan of the Caribbean. It shifted one-third of cultivated land to export crops, and it facilitated 240 multinational corporations employing hundreds of thousands of workers, predominantly female workers, sewing garments for baseballs for Major League Baseball and Disney merchandise. The scholar Yasmin Shamsi documented that these jobs were paying as little as 11 cents an hour, and there was a decline from that. That's the agenda today in spades, brothers and sisters. Support this effort to expose it and to oppose it. It's all of our task.
And keep dialing. Just because we're off the air, the news is on, and you want to hear the news, you can still chew gum and take a step. What is it, Ralph, to say?
Oh, Maya. Pick up the phone, brothers and sisters. We're all in this together.
212-209-2950. Please call. Continue to call. Keep those lines lit up. And, again, this has been Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoen
and Maya Schoen. Check out our website, www.takingaimradio.com, for information on how to contact Lynn Stewart.
And thank you, Michael G., as always. You were incredible.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It's my pleasure. Look forward to it. Thank you so much. Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen, final moments of Taking Aim this afternoon. The 2-CD set for a pledge of $75. The Ongoing War Against the Haitian People, for Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen. Thank you so very much, Ralph and Maya. Coming up in a moment, the evening news, and right after that, a special expanded edition of Tahrir, Voices of the Middle East here in the U.S. and abroad with Dr. Barbara Nimri Aziz. A few of the calls have dropped off now. We have about 10, 11 calls, and we can take 15 of you on the air right now. 212-209-2950. Thank you so much.
Like many of you, like many Americans, I have felt frustrated and betrayed by the state of the mainstream media in this country, a media whose priorities seem out of step